Trend number 5. Offshoring comes full circle. As offshoring gained momentum over the past two decades, there was little expectation, especially in manufacturing, that the pendulum would ever swing back. In fact, offshoring seemed relentless. Consider that by 2003, up to one-half of manufacturing companies in Western Europe were offshoring some or all of their production. According to the Duke Offshoring Research Network, over 50% of U.S. companies were offshoring production by 2008. Double the figure for 2005. In addition, it was reported that of those companies, 60% had aggressive plans to expand their offshoring activities. Large, small, and mid-sized companies were motivated largely by price. However, smaller and mid-sized companies had an additional motivation. Unable to effectively compete for top domestic talent, these companies turned offshore in their search for innovation support. And small companies have been particularly successful at finding and tapping into new geographical talent clusters, such as those found in Brazil, Egypt, Sri Lanka, and Russia. Because the offshore model encompasses such an extensive number of nations, products, and practices, it's difficult to determine the total dollar size of the activity. But it's easy to understand what drove the practice. It was kickstarted by customer demands for lower prices and by the need to compete with companies that were already experiencing the cost advantages delivered by aggressive offshoring. It was a simple economic equation. Suppliers in China and other low labor cost countries were offering prices that appeared to be 25 to 40% lower than those of domestic suppliers. Other factors included favorable exchange rates, access to cheap commodities, and low shipping rates. But saving money was just one part of the equation. To make offshoring a winning strategy, companies also needed to meet target service levels as well as maintain and improve coordination with the foreign providers. Many found that to be truly successful required a senior-level champion for offshoring efforts, plus buy-in on the part of internal stakeholders and effective procedures for selecting offshore providers, conducting visits to provider facilities, and maintaining a corporate offshoring resource center. As you'd expect, doing all these things effectively posed big hurdles. But the expected return on investment was viewed as worth it, at least until very recently, when the picture appears to be changing. Consider a few examples. Vanaman Manufacturing is a dental equipment producer that has been offshoring most of its sheet metal fabrication to China since 2002. However, this fabrication process is now being brought back to the United States. NCR Corporation, which has been producing its ATM machines in China, India, and Hungary, is returning all of its production to a facility in Columbus, Georgia. And last year, General Electric announced that it was moving some of its appliance manufacturing from China to Louisville, Kentucky. These are not isolated cases. Rather, they represent a widespread swing of the pendulum. An Archstone SCMR survey of manufacturers reported that nearly 90% of manufacturers are contemplating a change, or have already changed their manufacturing and supply strategy. This includes shifting from offshoring to onshoring. The question is, why? In short, many of the factors that once provided the reduced costs of offshoring have shifted in such a way that they are now erasing many of the savings, making offshoring a costly choice for many companies. A key factor is labor costs, which have risen by double digits in the past few years in some places. In China, for example, by mid-2010, many companies found it necessary to raise wages to attract qualified workers in the face of labor shortages. Just as China experienced a tenfold growth in exports from 1978 through 2006, personal income also increased. According to World Bank figures, back in 1981, more than 600 million Chinese were living on less than $1 per day. But adjusted for inflation, that number had dropped to about 150 million by 2005. And by 2011, worker shortages, accompanied by strikes and worker unrest, prompted some of the largest companies to increase wages by 24 to 80%. It's not just labor costs that have risen. Commodity costs have also experienced double-digit increases, ranging as high as 27% in 1 year. Furthermore, transportation costs, such as ocean freight, have increased by 135% in recent years. Higher oil prices have also driven up other production costs for manufacturers. One of the big reasons Vanaman Manufacturing, mentioned earlier, is now adopting onshoring is the steep jump in shipping and overseas travel costs, coupled with higher commodity costs. Upon closer analysis, many companies are even discovering that some of the perceived cost advantages were never really as high as they thought. They hadn't taken into account so-called soft costs, such as the inflexibility of the supply chain. Offshoring most often requires container-sized minimum orders and months-long order cycle times, neither of which provide much flexibility and responsiveness. This can lead to a loss of competitiveness when a company loses the ability to tailor products and services to quickly changing customer demands, or to meet unanticipated spikes in product demand. When GE and NCR announced plans for onshoring, a key reason cited by both companies was to be closer to the market so responses could be quicker. There are many other soft costs that eat into the perceived savings of offshoring. These include lack of supply chain visibility, insufficient monitoring of suppliers, and loss of managerial control over issues such as employee turnover. These factors can lead to quality issues, piracy, intellectual capital theft, and risks to corporate reputation. As the cost equation tips away from offshoring, some costly and problematic factors are beginning to be viewed as no longer worth it. One is the time and money devoted to traveling between headquarters and foreign suppliers that are required for a company to maintain an effective working relationship. Another is the extra effort required to work through cultural differences that quite often result in two very different impressions of what was agreed upon in a single conversation. Now that rising hard costs, such as labor and commodity prices, are causing companies to reevaluate offshoring, they are coming to realize that these soft costs were largely preventing the 25 to 40% expected savings from offshoring sourcing from reaching the bottom line. In light of this trend, we offer the following three forecasts. First, while we'll never see 100% onshoring of manufacturing, companies will increasingly analyze the whole economic equation before offshoring. In many cases, companies will take a blended approach, employing both models. The choice of one strategy over another will require weighting costs versus flexibility. That is, the relative value of low production costs versus the value of short lead times. Increasingly, the jargon is reflecting the reality. Offshoring is now labeled efficient sourcing and meets the needs for low production costs. Onshoring is labeled responsive sourcing, as it meets the need for flexibility. In addition, executives choosing between offshoring and onshoring will need to take into account three factors as they relate to their specific business model. 1. Consumer demand. 2. Market size. And 3. Supplier and competitor costs. If demand is relatively stable and predictable, offshoring may still offer attractive cost savings. If a company is in a market that fluctuates unexpectedly, onshoring will offer more competitive response times. Market size is a factor since smaller markets tend to be more competitive, with smaller quantities being sold. This will dictate a greater need for flexibility, and therefore it is more likely to require onshoring. Companies targeting mid-sized markets will benefit from a blended approach, taking advantage of the cost savings of offshoring, but relying on onshoring to fill short-term needs. And, in all cases, supplier and competitor costs will be closely watched, taking into account all costs, both hard and soft. Second, businesses that don't examine all the factors in the choice between offshoring and onshoring will likely choose the wrong method and lose a competitive edge. Companies that adopt a so-called total cost model will be better able to craft the most beneficial sourcing model, whether offshoring, onshoring, or a blended approach. Key areas they will consider include supplier price and terms, delivery costs, operations and quality costs, customer-centric supply capabilities, and a handful of costs that are often excluded from consideration, such as local tax incentives, broker fees, infrastructure technology and facilities, exchange rates differentials, and tooling and mold costs. And third, companies will have to expect more barriers to onshoring than most people would imagine. After many years of offshoring manufacturing migration, the infrastructure that once supported domestic manufacturing has been decimated. The highly skilled engineering and technical blue-collar workforce has been greatly reduced. And much of the supplier network that once served certain industries has gone away. A strong commitment and investment in reestablishing these elements will be needed. Activities such as reacquiring workforce skills, industrial site planning, plant construction, and infrastructure rebuilding will be tall hurdles that may need to be overcome with state and local tax incentives. And relaxing of oppressive government regulations that have put a stranglehold on businesses over the years will be key to helping make onshoring a major growth trend in both the U.S. and EU.